Blog Talk Radio.
Kilograms
acquired 55% of Medical Cannabis Limited, a company founded by marijuana industry pioneer Andrew Cavazzias, who was one of the first Australians to legally grow cannabis under a New South Wales trial in 2000. In June 2018, it doubled down on its cannabis ventures, acquiring the remaining stake in MCL and entering into a licensing arrangement with MedCan Australia, which holds a medical cannabis license from the Office of Drug Control. Fast forward to today, and the renamed Cannabis Global Limited is now one of the ASX's pot stocks to watch. While Cafasia serves as a chair technical officer for its cannabis business, Government told Business Insider Australia that the transformation, and especially the process of delisting and relisting, which required a number of different prospectuses to be lodged to the ASX, was complex and took longer than expected. But it seemed undeterred from the ultimate prize. We know there is increasing demand for cannabis and hemp products in Australia and global markets. So our primary focus is to grow and develop medicinal cannabis products to serve this demand. So the tool Business Insider Australia market analyst Tina Shawardi of Calcai told Business Insider Australia that Can Global, not to be confused with fellow Aussie marijuana company Can Group, has come a long way given its transformation strategy. Having relisted on February 23rd, August at 3 cents per share, by Monday the 26th, the stock price had fallen 10% before rising to 3.5 cents a share on the following Friday. On the news that it had entered into a supply arrangement with a U.S. retail, Costco. Costco's 11 Australian stores made an order of 6,900 bottles of Can Global Vita Hemp Seed Oil Capsules. Our hemp seed oil capsules are a natural and plant-based alternative to fish capsules without the fishy aftertaste, Dublin said in a statement of the Costco deal. We hope to see this in all our products and brands on many Australian tables in the years to come and distribute it across Asia. For that to happen, Aussie investors would likely reward that transformed company. But right now, they remain cautious, Calvert said. The group has been still under the inertia, with investors yet to get acclimatized to the proposed changes to the business, given the complexity in the structure as illustrated across medicinal cannabis, hemp seed food, and mining divisions. While it might be hard for some investors to get their heads around, these kinds of transformations are unlikely to be a one-off as the Australian economy tries to wean itself on mining and fossil fuels. This is written by Business Insider, Australian. The Australian company went from mining bauxite to Queensland to growing medical cannabis. Written by Alex Newcomer, Smoke News Radio, Jason Bradskin in the mic. Best production methods. Here we go. Back market in Queensland and Australia at alien.com.au. This is a section from Benson Sierra in South Australia. Finally nearing its medicinal cannabis boom. Read to you by Jason Brodsky of Smoke News Radio. By the way, is known as the Amsterdam of the Southern Hemisphere, says Ben Fitzsimmons. Recalled this thought process nearly half a decade ago, as she considered how she might establish the medicinal cannabis industry here. I watched what was happening in Colorado and Oregon and thought it's an opportunity to change life that existed. It seemed like a worthy proposition. Both U.S. states legalized recreational cannabis in 2014, and have seen spectacular economic results. During the first year, the government of Colorado made $130 million in new tax revenue from the recreational cannabis alone. Australian lawmakers far from ready for that significant a change in mindset, but a change was coming. By early 2016, Australia's federal parliament passed a bill that laid the groundwork for cannabis to be legally cultivated and manufactured for medicinal and scientific purposes. Fitzsimmons seized the opportunity. He approached the Weathercote Group and ran plans to occupy half of Holden's 25-hectare car manufacturing plant. And Elizabeth, then doomed to closure with hydroponic cannabis crops and a medicinal production line. He had his business partner, outspoken financier Shane Yannett, sprite a 2,500 person jobs bonanza and 800 million industry for North Adelaide. When the area was in good need of economic stimulus. By October of that year, the state government had publicly endorsed a medical cannabis industry for South Australia and agreed not to stand in the way of the company as it looked to the federal government for approval. The cooperation was short-lived. In the months that followed, Fitzsimmons and Yin publicly criticized the government for failing to facilitate their plans quickly enough. The government ruled the Holden's plan out as potential site for cannabis cultivation. Australian Cannabis Corporation lost a major research partnership and appeared as a messy public falling out. Fitzsimmons soon co-founded a new cannabis company, WeCan, which he now says is working on relationships overseas. Although he can't give up on South Australia, he concedes, I probably would be better off going over to America and setting shop. every mother produces, actually produce more natural cannabinoids than the average person until they recover from seven strokes, says Elizabeth Fenton, CEO of Australia, with this podcast. A rare neurocrystallopathy disorder caused her strokes for her childhood and then three in adult life, and she has recovered remarkably well. She built a career in clinical hypnotherapy and was involved in nutritional specialty dietary supplements and regenerative agriculture industry before turning her attention to the commercial possibilities of medical cannabis. In late 1916, Fenta was working with a team to identify potential Australian sites and scan the international market for the best production methods. By the following year, she and her collaborators had attracted enough financial backing to start working on prospective business full-time, and cannabis was emerging as one of the next big industries in Australia. The largest Australian cannabis companies already boasted market capitalization north of $100 million. The Victorian and New South Wales governments have both begun clinical trials of cannabis products for children with severe epilepsy and for palliative care, respectively. In December 2017, the National Office of Drug Control released its licensing protocols that allowed LeafCan to begin taking seriously to real estate agents about where they would build Australia's first large-scale seed-to-sale medicinal cannabis facility. There were potential sites in Tasmania where plants ended up living for 7 months, and others in Victoria and New South Wales. But in southern Australia, as I said, her company found a friendlier peer in government. We got a good site at a competitive price. Then we're able to work with local and state government to really ensure that we're building something that was wanted, she says. This is hard enough without having to fight against the community that doesn't want it there. The key was to get federal licenses approved, and for that you need state government support. State governments don't really have any say in helping you get your license, but they can work against it, she says. The bureaucrats that we worked with in South Australia were very helpful and able to explain any bureaucratic issue. We found the environment to be positive and supportive. It was strikingly different from Simmons and Jet's experience. 9 months after the election of the Marshall government in 2018, LeafCan organized the first feature of medical cannabis symposium in Adelaide. Minister for Industry and Skills David Tession published a medical release to mark the occasion entitled South Australia Welcomes Cannabis Industry Leaders. Our state was the right blend of strengths in advanced horticulture, research, and specialized manufacturing to have a real competitive advantage in this space, Tission enthused. Fienta is paraphrased in the release, saying that Australia was missed out on billions of dollars in export income. it was to go ahead with its plans. And plus, indicating the company has about $8 million in private investment and control of the Adelaide site, where it plans on medicinal cannabis cultivation research and processing plant. Its location cannot be identified more specifically as a condition of these cannabis licenses. Will be employing well in excess of 1,000 when all three of our licenses are operational. We want to create high-value jobs, she said. The clinical trials and status of production could leave the world. A handful of small businesses already manufacture cannabis products legally in South Australia, but the products are necessarily expensive because they are made from imported cannabis. Having survived a rare childhood disease myself has been a guiding light for our company, says Hansa. We don't want anyone to have to go into debt to afford our products. South Australian Minister for Trade, Tourism and Investment, David Ridgway, we want to encourage of medicinal cannabis issues. So in daily, three companies have medicinal cannabis manufacturing licenses in Australia. Two also have cultivation licenses, and one also has a research license. The Marshall Liberal government believes there are huge growth opportunities within the health and medical industry sector, which is why it is one of our sector priorities under our new growth state plan, which was said. Medicinal cannabis is a key contributor to this industry, and we see it as only growing in importance as we look to expand our economy by an ambitious 3% a year. He added that South Australia is the only state or territory with a designated office which is facilitating industry development in this emerging sector. The Office for Industrial Health and Medicinal Cannabis Act has a single point of contact for industry to provide support and advice to companies and new ventures in cultivation and processing of the plant. A Labour Party spokesperson said, "We hope the Marshall Liberal government will continue to put specialists at the forefront of decisions about the treatment of their patients." Around the country, the industry march is gathering pace. ASX Listed Cap Group, which was the first Australian company to receive a cultivation license for medicinal cannabis. We said manufacturing licenses for its facilities in Melbourne last month. Another Australian company, Cannatrek, was last week reportedly given the green light to develop a $160 million plant near the Victorian town Shepparton. The Office of Drug Control in its medicinal cannabis boom. Brought to you by Jesse Bucks and Smoke News Radio. Let's go see what's happening back over in Pakistan. Everybody deserves a smile. This man was about to put lots of smiles to people because this is peanuts. From mangobaez.com, written by Rafiz Ahmad, titled, "This Man Tried Smuggling Hash in Peanut Shells," and LOL. 10 for 10 for creativity. And to keep up with the considerable demand for the drug, they're losing the game. Okay, so here we go. To keep up with the considerable demand for the drug, as it is to be supplied, Shah Aras is part of northern areas because it's mostly grown there, but it must be made available. Okay, so basically, this guy smuggled it in peanut shells. This writer is having to do this. And why is the guard holding the hand of the guy? Like, they're really holding his hand. They're not like boyfriend, girlfriend holding it. They're just holding hands. But these are like two giant bags of peanuts filled with hash on the inside. Like, those are so freaking awesome. That's so, so, yeah, I can paint this for you. They open up all these peanuts, and it's just where the peanuts should be. That's just hash. It's just like a lot of hash. And really, like, dude, why are you getting peanuts, bro? Like, were you wearing anything else in? How did you pull the peanut out? It's just, that's crazy peanuts. So nice to the. Ten notes to the freaking. Do Firefly again with Felicity at these peanuts? No. Okay. Alright, so. Washington Post. This is written by Michelle Langdon-Leiby. Political conflicts in Pakistan damage hashish business. Read to you on Smoke News Radio, just brought. This is Islamabad, Pakistan. Spring in Pakistan's capital brings explosions of pink bougie and subtle scents of roses. There's another unmistakable aroma wafting in the air, too, thanks to the abundance of a widespread plant, marijuana. The weed grows wild throughout Islamabad, noticeable along roadsides and in parks and vacant lots, where fields are already waist high. Thanks to recent rains, climbing heat here, the uncultivated plant is of little interest or value to residents, but cannabis is an important cash crop to the northwestern mountainous regions of Pakistan. The
manner of mass production. Today, though, pot farmers and hashish producers are facing hard times and considerable danger. The Pakistani Taliban and allied extremists have largely taken control of the hashish-rich Tehran Valley in the Khyber Tribal Agency, pushing out residents and taking over their crops and production of the smokable drug. In a recent armed clash, militants attacked a pro-government tribal militia and occupied the valley. The Pakistani army has launched an offensive against the insurgents in a struggle that has claimed scores of lives on both sides. The conflict has also spurred a migration of nearly 50,000 people to the nearest big city. Peshawar, the capital of Khyber, took to Pindqua province and surrounding areas. Officials say that the number of those displaced are likely to grow, and that there is little chance that any of the refugees will see their homes again soon. During the 1960s and 70s, Peshawar was a far more mellow place. It was an obligatory stop along what was called the Hippie Trail, which drew American and European wanderers to Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, Nepal, and other exotic locales in search of groovy times and good hash. Numerous low-budget hotels and thriving tourist industries sprang up to accommodate these travelers in Peshawar, Lahore, and Karachi, wrote down newspaper blogger Nadeem F. Paracha, who chronicled some of the secular features of Pakistan's past in a series last year called Also Pakistan. He included a grainy black and white photo of real hippies enjoying a few puffs of hashish on the roof of a cheap hotel in Peshawar in 1972. Consumption of hashish is prohibited by law in Pakistan, but in Khyber and other tribal areas, the law is lightly enforced, if at all. Elsewhere in Pakistan, the use of hashish is widely tolerated. The marijuana plant also is boiled with water, almonds, and milk to create bhang, a popular drink often served cool during warm months. The hash markets in and around Peshawar still thrive, and smoking the pungent product called Garda remains popular. Hashish is produced by compressing the resin-rich flowers of the cannabis plant and maturing the resulting tacky substance in goat skins. Farmers say some of the best hashish comes from the Tira Valley, where tribesmen process it in their homes, or used to. Displaced residents say the extremists seize their goods to use as a source of funding for their insurgency against the Pakistani state. The stock of hashish is in the control of the occupants of the valley, said a displaced tribesman, say Jahan Fertu, without mentioning the names of the militant groups that are thought to control the valley. Turkey, Taiwan, Pakistan, and Lashkar e Islam. Some tribesmen expect the price of hashish to increase because most of the farmers missed the growing season that began last month as the extremists pushed them out. There is a projection that prices will go up next year as the people did not grow the marijuana crop. As Jihad not settled in Peshawar, it will have its impact on the market in the months ahead. Marijuana and its product hashish is the main source of income of our people, said Zaman Afridi, for a refugee United Nations run. Jalozai camp, not far from Peshawar, we missed the marijuana growing season in March, and only 5 to 6% of people might have cultivated the crop, Afridi said. Because of the insurgency, the price of hashish has gone up several times, he said. The top grade hashish was sold for between 200 and 250 a kilogram before 2009, when major Pakistani army offenses began in the Khyber Agency. But now the price is doubled, he said. And Afridi predicted this large scale migration will have negative effects on the hashish prices in the near future. Read by the Washington Post, that was Michelle Lundin-Levy. Political conflicts in Pakistan damage hashish business. Like, what's going on? Let's see. Jump back here on the Smoke News Radio airplane. We've got Business Insider Australia requests more about this from Sharon Sita. Cannabis regulation in Australia could be about to become way less complex, but an industry expert says the devil will be in the detail. Read to you by Smoke News Radio, Jason Brett. Cannabis regulation in Australia has taken a step forward. Last Thursday, a report into the National Drugs Act, NDAC, was tabled in Parliament, which recommended a major overhaul of the licensing regime for the drug that might see more Australian businesses able to operate in the growing market. The review of the Narcotic Drugs Act 1967 final report was compiled by Australian National University professor John McMillan and commissioned by Health Minister Greg Hunt in 2018 to review how effective the law has been in terms of cannabis regulation. Following three public consultations, the report detailed 26 recommendations around cannabis licensing and the role of the Office of Drug Control, the government agency that regulates and provides advice on the manufacture, import, an export of drugs, including cannabis, in Australia. One of the main recommendations in the report was to amend the act once again to establish a single license scheme for cannabis production. In 2016, the ND Act was amended to create a national regime that allowed the cultivation and production of cannabis in Australia under a licensing scheme. The licenses, however, would be granted separately for cultivation and
presents a burden for the ODC as well. A problem that businesses inside Australia has previously highlighted. Licensed applicants must submit separate applications for each license, provide information and documents of a similar kind in support of each application, and liaise with the ODC and possibly different ODC staff on each application, report said. Doubts can arise as to which activities, such as research and product development, fall within each license category. The report called for the creation of a single license structure that could authorize some or all of the cultivation, production, manufacture, and research processes. This would enable adoption of a simpler and more streamlined process for license application and approval, the report said. As of June 2019, the ODC received 246 license applications, but only granted 63, 24 medicinal cannabis licenses, 16 cannabis research licenses, and 23 manufacturer licenses. The report highlighted that it was a far higher number than expected, which points to strong commercial interest in the Australian medicinal cannabis industry. Rise Coleman, director of Cannabis Consulting Australia, told Business Insider Australia that while the report was a positive step in terms of cannabis regulation in the country, we still have to see how it will work in reality. I don't want to overhype it until we know how it will work in practice, Cohen said, but it is nice to see a reasonable approach being taken in the cannabis regulation in Australia. Cohen said the idea of streamlining the licenses makes sense, especially since the current license application process is non-prescriptive and quite creative, and with the onus on applicants to explain how they will manage their obligations and responsibilities. This means that in practice, everyone's license is different already. One person's cultivation license is very different to someone else's, he said. But he added that the proposal in the now tabled report will bring both advantages and disadvantages, depending on where applicants stand. It tends to be heavily benefit more sophisticated applicants, I would say, and it tends to disadvantage those applicants who think that this is a cookie-cutter approach and say, hey, how much do I need to pay to get a license? The report also questioned whether cannabidiol, the psychoactive chemical compound within cannabis, should be considered a drug. Cannabidiol is a pure form, is not listed or scheduled as a narcotic drug in the International Drug Control Conventions, to which Australia is a party. Cohen agrees that cannabidiol shouldn't be classified as a narcotic. Clearly, cannabidiol, which doesn't cause intoxication, has no addictive potential and cannot be abused in any way, shape, or form. Clearly, it's not the narcotic drug, and it seems
England has come around to that argument. A change in the definition would mean that companies who use cannabinoid in their products would not need to go through the rigmarole or getting a separate manufacturing license from the OTC instead. Health Minister Greg Hunt has accepted all 26 recommendations put forward by Professor McMillan, which broadly aim to reduce the regulatory burden on industry, promote and allow greater flexibility in the administration of the legislation to support industry innovation and development, according to the ODC. But as Cohen says, we'll all have to see how this plays out.
You're listening to Smoke News Radio, read to you by Jason Brodsky. This has been the businessinsider.com.au, written by Sharon Masihe. Cannabis Regulation Australia could be about to become way less complex. Quick one from abc.net.au. Helicopter broadcasting Delta cycling race captures rooftop marijuana plantation in Spain. A television broadcast from one of the world's most prestigious cycling races has inadvertently led to the discovery of a rooftop marijuana plantation. Spanish police announced they had seized 40 marijuana plants from the roof of a building in the town of Igualada, northwest of Barcelona, after the footage was broadcast from a helicopter during stage 8 of La Vuelta a España. A race organizer shared highlights of the stage on their social media accounts, but eagle-eyed observers noticed something extra in the videos. The union representing Spain's Guardia Civil Police then reshared the video, highlighting the location of the plantation. We received information via social media that there was a marijuana plantation on the roof of a block of flats in Igualada, a spokesman for Mossos Esquadra, the Catalonia Regional Police Force, told The Guardian. We began an investigation, which is still underway, and we have seized 40 plants. For the moment, there have been no arrests. The Guardian reported that officers were investigating who owned the plants, as the terrace was not connected to the apartments in the building. Spain has decriminalized the personal cultivation and use of marijuana, but it's still illegal to grow the drug for commercial purposes. The 21-day La Vuelta race is one of the cycling's famous grand tours along the Giro d'Italia and Tour de France. That was brought to you abc.net.au. Real fun in Spain. Cycling races. Thank everyone very much for listening to Smoke News Radio. My name is Jason Brodsky. I've been your host tonight, and the world is a different place anywhere you're at. I wish it could be the same for marijuana. Some places are able to remove their version of scheduling, and instead of like our federal government's trying to get to Schedule 3, someone's putting that out there right now. other places could actually reschedule and reclassify these things so much simpler. And it's beautiful to watch the world wake up and to help see next at the United Nations, how they work with their convention on drug classification for marijuana. It's the next big step, scheduling the United Nations, and then the world could take a sigh of relief. Oh my gosh, such a sigh of relief. It'd be so beautiful that day. Be so happy. Scheduling and United Nations today, the same day on the planet, fix their freaking scheduling. This is so awesome. Love it, love it, love it. So thank you so much. You're listening to Smoke News Radio. I'm your host, Jason Rowski, helping support marijuana awareness around the world and reading stuff. Silly fella. So we're going to have Jack Johnson take it away. We got some good reports for you. Here you go. What's your alternate ending?
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's sight. Well, mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullaby. That it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight. Well, mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight. On the news tonight, the unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullaby.